So there's going to be pressure put on the system that reprocesses those to make them turn over faster, make them more readily available to that large number of patients. And so there's going to be some time pressure. There's going to be maybe the temptation to cut some corners, perhaps, or even leave out steps that might be critical to safely reprocessing those. SPD folks are very well trained, and they understand how critical their mission is to the safety of patients. But sometimes in a crisis, things can put a lot of pressure on folks in their roles.
What if one conversation could save a life? What if one new process or new product could save a patient from surgical harm? Broadcasting from a hospital basement near you, you are listening to the Beyond Clean podcast, the global voice of sterile processing. Each week we spotlight the best practices, products and people from around the world who are disrupting our profession and helping you fight dirty. Every instrument, every time. Join us as we have the kinds of conversation that matter and give our industry the kind of voice that it deserves. Nyt on aika mennä puhdastakin puhtaammaksi. And now it's time to go beyond clean.
This week, Beyond Clean has a bonus episode for you on the topic of COVID-19 or coronavirus and your role in sterile processing. We speak with Dr. Ryan Lewis, who is the Senior Director of Medical Affairs for Advanced Sterilization Products in Irvine, California. He is a licensed physician with a master's in public health from Johns Hopkins University, where his emphasis was in leadership, public health policy, and medical devices. He was physician at large for the Coconino County Board of Health in Arizona, the second largest county in the U.S., and he has been in the medical device industry for 20 years. Mike, we were searching around for somebody to come onto the show and speak to us about coronavirus, but nobody better than Dr. Ryan Lewis, where we actually recently received a paper not only on the coronavirus, but really around the role that sterile processing professionals play in this environment. And so great to take some of his insight and knowledge and bring it to the podcast and get it out to our listening audience.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think we kind of have in some cases an information overload, you know, because this is all anyone is talking about. But one piece that nobody else is talking about is, how does this affect sterile processing, or does it affect it at all? And so this is a really important topic for us to discuss on this podcast because, I mean, who else is going to talk about it, right?
That's right, Mike. It's Beyond Clean. So we're going to get right into the interview after this.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Dr. Ryan Lewis, Senior Director of Medical Affairs for Advanced Sterilization Products Incorporated. And Ryan, we're really excited to have you on the show. Maybe not so excited for the reasons behind this bonus podcast. We're in between season 7 and season 8 of Beyond Clean, but as anybody who is listening to this episode is fully aware, just about every focus in healthcare right now is on COVID-19 or the coronavirus. And interestingly, we got a document from you and your organization maybe a month and a half ago talking about how this was going to be an impending concern for healthcare. And you had an interesting take here on preventing contaminated medical devices in the context of coronavirus. So nobody better to come and talk with us today about this topic. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Well, I think we should just start with, what do we know about the coronavirus? Because I know a lot of people are watching the news every single day, and depending on what channel they're watching, they're getting different information. And I just thought maybe we could anchor around, you know, some real solid facts as we kick this off.
Yes, Justin, there's still a lot unknown about the coronavirus, for sure. Fortunately, there have been a couple of coronaviruses prior to this that have been studied to provide a little bit of information on what coronaviruses can do. But this particular coronavirus is behaving fairly similar, but a little bit different. You know, it's on everybody's minds right now. It's a disease that probably started about mid-December 2019, and that's where the name comes from, COVID-19, coronavirus disease 19. And it really started in this region, Wuhan, China. The scientists tell us that it started a zoonosis, or in other words, a disease that normally is in animals but made a jump to humans.
So, Ryan, like you mentioned, there have been a number of coronaviruses prior, and I think it's important to note that, you know, this isn't COVID-1, this is COVID-19. And so I wondered if you could kind of describe for us what is so special about this virus, especially considering maybe previous coronaviruses like SARS or MERS.
So SARS stands for Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, and MERS stands for Middle East Acute Respiratory Syndrome, are two very similar coronaviruses in that family, the same family of coronaviruses. And they also had the ability to cause epidemics and pandemic spread. So what's really critical about these particular viruses, SARS, MERS, and now COVID-19, are that they are capable of spreading rapidly in human population and causing sometimes severe disease. It seems like COVID-19 has already far surpassed both SARS and MERS in the number of patients affected and the number of deaths worldwide. And recently, the World Health Organization declared it a pandemic. And so I think we'll see more cases and more deaths from COVID-19 than we're seeing with either SARS or MERS.
Yeah, there's certainly been a big impact on not just the healthcare industry, but the NBA has suspended their season. Lots of the conferences that are in healthcare, including AORN's a big one, was canceled as well, obviously to help prevent the rapid spread of the virus. But I also wanted to just talk about such a variation in symptoms. It seems like some people have really minor symptoms, but then it ranges obviously all the way to severe symptoms and ultimately possibly leading to death. I think half the death toll coming from one long-term care facility just outside of Seattle. So Are there a standard set of symptoms, or do we see a wide range? We already kind of know that the severity of the symptoms has quite a wide range, but what about the types of symptoms that somebody might experience?
Yeah, so we're seeing a fairly wide range of symptoms. You know, as the name implies, it's a respiratory virus. And so most of the symptoms we see are flu-like right now, and they can range from mild, and it tends to be more mild in younger populations, people below, let's say, 60, and all the way up to severe, where patients might develop severe respiratory symptoms such as shortness of breath, inability to oxygenate their blood, the need for mechanical ventilation, that sort of thing. Fortunately, most people don't go on to that advanced stage where they need ventilators. It's a small percentage, and they tend to be over the age of 60 and also have maybe some other comorbidities or other health conditions like heart problems or pre-existing respiratory problems or high blood pressure, diabetes, those sorts of things.
So obviously a lot of our listeners work in the medical device reprocessing industry. And so I think there are many out there who are kind of wondering, you know, what role does sterile processing play in this current outbreak? Because there's so much strain, like you said, that's being placed on healthcare, and potentially it could get worse. And so I think there's probably a lot of us who are saying, okay, what do we do?
Boy, I sure appreciate those people in sterile processing department. As a doctor, my training was in ear, nose, and throat, head and neck surgery, and much of what they do is behind the scenes, but so critical. I think as a patient and as a physician, I expect when I go to the hospital that I'll be safe. I'll be kept safe and free from any potential sources of infection. Well, especially during a crisis, I think that the processes and the systems within the hospital become even more critical in order to keep patients, in fact, staff safe from disease transmission.
So, Ryan, as an industry, and I don't just mean as healthcare providers, I mean hospital staff and vendors, and despite the fact that a lot of vendors are being restricted to only going into the facility at many hospitals if they're supporting a scheduled case that day, but what can we all do to help prevent the spread of COVID-19 in the healthcare setting?
Right. I think there's some very, very basic principles at work here that healthcare providers and people who work in the healthcare setting are fairly familiar with, but sometimes we may forget. And we talk about some of those basics, such as washing your hands and doing that appropriately, making sure you cover all the surfaces, using hand sanitizer when needed, making sure that you cover your coughs and sneezes, even in the healthcare setting. The appropriate use of personal protective equipment, PPE, making sure that you're able to don and doff those without contaminating yourself or others. And again, masks need to be appropriately fitted, and masks need to also be used in, according to manufacturer's specifications. But I think for all of us that are in healthcare and serving patients, I think we just need to be aware of those recommendations right now from public health. Keep ourselves healthy and strong by engaging in self-care, making sure we get enough sleep and proper nutrition, and then be available to help.
You know, we have such a tendency to dismiss sort of basic things. And I know there's probably a lot of people out there who may not wear masks on their when they're normally, you know, in decontamination, or maybe they kind of skimp on the hand hygiene, and their thinking is, what's the big deal? It's such a simple thing to maintain hand hygiene. It's such a simple thing to cover your coughs and your sneezes. And it's almost like we're looking for like some big, amazing solution to some of these problems, when really what we need is just basic stuff, normal stuff, standard precautions. And so I'm grateful that we, you know, we have cooler heads who are available to be able to tell us these kinds of things. And I think one of the biggest issues with COVID-19 is the potential for that overwhelming demand that can be placed on hospitals. Can you describe the impact of that overwhelming demand that can be placed particularly on high volume reprocessing in a crisis situation?
So in a crisis situation, there may be the need to use equipment more than what is standard during normal operations. For example, imagine that you have a number of patients coming to the hospital who potentially have coronavirus, this COVID-19. And part of the workup is to do bronchoalveolar lavage, which is a procedure done with a bronchoscope, a long, flexible endoscope that's put down the airway and down into the lung. Some saline is injected through the working channel and then suctioned back up through to take a sample to be sent off to the microbiology lab for diagnosis. Imagine a number of patients, a large number, are needing bronchoalveolar lavage or lung washing, I guess we can call it in common terms. And there are only a fixed number of bronchoscopes at that facility, and those bronchoscopes are going to be used more than normal. So there's going to be pressure put on the system that reprocesses those to make them turn over faster, make them more readily available to that large number of patients. And so there's going to be some time pressure. There's going to be maybe the temptation to cut some corners, perhaps, or even leave out steps that might be critical to safely reprocessing those. SPD folks are very well trained, and they understand how critical their mission is to the safety of patients. But sometimes in a crisis, things can put a lot of pressure on folks in their roles.
Well, and I think you said the key phrase there, and that is pressure, because, you know, as we look at sort of human performance metrics, and I know our chief medical officer, Dr. Peter Nickel, has talked about this on the show before, that when you have a well-trained process in place, error rates tend to be relatively low. I think national standards are typically about one per 100 opportunities, but as soon as you add stress into the mix, that jumps from 1 in 100 to about 1 in 10. And so when we talk about something as, you know, potentially dangerous as flexible endoscopy, just in general, one mistake per 10 opportunities when cleaning one of these things properly might have as many as 100 steps, you're talking about potentially making 10 mistakes per reprocess. And so this becomes really critical for the process to be well understood, to be well trained, and to have a sufficient amount of equipment available, as well as the ability to turn it over very rapidly.
That is 100% accurate, especially these are complex pieces of equipment to clean and disinfect. Some of the equipment also needs to go through a sterilization process, but I would say that leaving out a step could make the difference between transmitting a disease from patient to patient versus having safe reprocessed medical device for the next patient to use.
So, Ryan, we had an interview, I think it was the second episode of season 7, and it was really focused on a story from Las Vegas and really talking about emergency preparedness and how many people, after one of our largest mass shootings, how everybody in the healthcare area had pulled together and gone to offer support, and just the measures in place that hospitals have to be ready in the event of an emergency or a disaster. And this is one of those scenarios that really tests hospital preparedness. And I thought one of the biggest challenges is supplies. You mentioned masks and PPE and getting those supplies, especially since this hit in China to begin with, has proven to be a rather large logistical challenge. That's also what you said, we got to keep the amount of people going into the hospital down so that we can keep the pace of play at a level where those supplies can be replenished. But do you have anything else that you might add just in terms of hospital preparedness and maybe even from a staffing standpoint, because the demand may be going up?
Yeah, from a staffing standpoint, things can happen that people are people. They have lives outside the hospital. You know, some may have childcare issues. For example, in Washington, we're seeing a number of school closures happening right now, which will impact the workforce, including hospital workforces. And so, you know, people have lives, and there's a level of personal preparedness that staff need to go through. But at the same time, being prepared as a hospital system, really making sure that folks are well trained, they're knowledgeable in their roles. that they understand how the equipment that they're interacting with, whether it's terminal sterilization piece of equipment or a high-level disinfection piece of equipment, they understand the intricacies of working that. They understand also how the disposables are used and monitored for those, and that there are sufficient supplies of those disposable or consumable items, such as biocide detergents and filters and other things that are part of the processes of disinfection and sterilization. And so, you know, the preparation needs to go on at a broader level than just being personally prepared. They need to make sure that there are sufficient stock to take care of the equipment that is processing these vital medical devices. And then also you need to make sure that there's sufficient training, and maybe training needs to be revisited during a crisis. It seems like that would be the last thing folks would want to do, but just reinforcing some of those key steps, you know, making sure that people understand they can take the time to do it right. And remember that pre-cleaning and cleaning and disinfection, you know, there are key steps that we want to make sure that people have enough time to do in order to make sure it's done right, so we don't compromise quality.
All right, Ryan, last question as we wrap up this bonus interview in between season 7 and season 8. But what else can be done at home and with our families and to protect them? I know there's a lot about, we kind of referenced quarantine earlier, but any additional thoughts of extra measures that can be taken maybe even outside of the healthcare environment?
So buy all the toilet paper you can find. No, just kidding.
It's funny because I literally joked earlier that I swear that's the only conversation happening on Facebook is coronavirus and toilet paper these days.
Yeah, that's right. No, I think making sure your family understands what hand washing is all about. You know, your family is precious to you. Your health is precious to you. It's part of your productivity and ability to do things on a daily basis. And we care about our loved ones. And hand washing is probably the most powerful thing we can do. Watching out for our vulnerable elderly family members. And I think our community public health officials are doing a good job of closing down public venues where people might be at risk. And just enjoy your family. Again, get the sleep you need, take care of your health, get a little exercise when you can, do whatever you need to do to make sure you feel healthy and that your loved ones are well taken care of.
All right, Ryan, you did a fantastic job, and I appreciate you coming on really on short notice. I think we talked, maybe 8 hours ago, and now we have the interview, and we're going to have this out to the sterile processing community, and I appreciate your contribution, especially during a time where maybe a lot of people are feeling uncertain. And so bringing some facts to the podcast and relating it to their day-to-day work in sterile processing, so key. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Ryan Lewis, Senior Director of Medical Affairs for Advanced Sterilization Products. And Mike, really a very obvious hot topic in the industry right now. But when we got this information, it just made so much sense because it's coming from the perspective of everybody has a role to play in healthcare on a day-to-day basis. But to be able to apply this specifically to the role that's being played by sterile processing professionals, I'm so glad we were able to provide that to our listeners, especially for such a timely subject.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you mentioned the episode that we did with Dwayne Taylor earlier where, you know, it just seems like it's a problem within our industry to connect what we do on a daily basis to what's going on in the hospital at large. And so when, you know, when we see something like this break out, like it's really easy to understand what role doctors play, and it's really easy to understand what role nurses play. But very often when it comes to what role do we play in sterile processing, it's very easy to get lost and just kind of say, well, you know, we just process instruments. But the reality is that we play a very important role to making sure that the devices that are needed to care for those patients are available and safe to use. And Ryan brought those up in a great way, and I'm just really grateful for this interview.
Yeah, you make a great point. It's all about maintaining that vision of healthcare, because if you work in a hospital, you're contributing. So very important to be able to remember everybody that's involved. You know, really, EVS has a huge role in this. So at some point, there needs to be a podcast very specific to EVS and their role as well. So many of the support services, I just hope they don't get overlooked because they're not providing direct patient care, but they're all very critical to the functioning in the hospital. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Mike and myself, thank you for listening to this bonus episode of Beyond Clean.